there were arrests of how many people in vehicles, more or less?
Well, at the beach, there were 9 vehicles, 11 people arrested.
And this was outside the city, it was done by the sheriffs, at which point a decision was made. I understand you had a certain controversy over making this decision, there was a certain difference of opinion, to occupy the county building as a temporary headquarters. Since your house has been taken away, you decided it was time to let the county house.
Yes, before we did that, we had total agreement.
Yeah, that was a consensus, except for you, because you left the room.
I did?
You were agitated or something. You didn't sit through the thick of the discussions that went on.
I didn't remember Robert being party to that. Was he there?
Was this at the
print shop?
He wasn't there at the print shop, but when we first started talking about it, he tried to tune it in. But mm-hmm. He was impatient, it seemed to me.
So, Linda, you were involved in a lot of this action. And again, the focus of our discussion is different ways of securing positive changes in the political climate, the laws, the policies, the sheriffs, and so forth, and the awareness of people as well. Maybe we can sort of backstep here to what your history was up to that point. Had you been involved in any poverty work? You been involved in any political activism? And what have your experience been?
I think I was, I saw myself as a foot soldier in the 60s to different things, college activism, trying to get guys that were being killed in Vietnam to have the right to vote before they were shot, things like that I had worked on. I was concerned about affirmative action, as you know, not that it did any good in this country, but I didn't see myself as a politically motivated person or community motivated person as I do now. I was new on welfare and I was really preoccupied with what I thought was my struggle to be adequate, and I really thought it was just me. I mean, it had been like a matter of months when I met Tom and Andy of trying to adjust to being on welfare instead of some husband's dependent.
You were on welfare in 1977 or?
Or maybe 76.
So you weren't involved in any actual political demonstrations around poverty issues in the 70s, or organizing people?
Well, I'm saying as a student, before I had children, what do you call political? I had a political struggle to get my daughter back when she was born and I wasn't married, and this was in the 60s, and that wasn't okay. And so the system had to find a way to make me inadequate. And I had to figure out how to overcome that with virtually no support. You know, I'm living in the streets in Washington, D.C., and I've got my daughter in a county in Maryland trying to, coerce and manipulate me to sign things for her release so they can adopt her out, because the younger she is, the more marketable she is. And I'm trying to fight this. I have a boyfriend somewhere else in that other county where my child is being held hostage and kept from me. I have a family that have been abusive. My stepmother wanted that kid, too. my life was a political struggle, but I didn't see it as political. I didn't know that that's how young women were typically treated in those days. Who knows how many other 19-year-olds suddenly found out what adulthood was while trying to do these perfectly natural things.
Well, in terms of, the focus of this, as I see it, is to plot a strategy for the future for dealing with issues like the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, police abuse, other laws that impact the poor.
Well, let me say a few sentences to get to where more time left up.
Sure.
I would give you, Robert, a lot of credit personally for my politicization.
Okay.
Coming to have a political outlook and a bit of a liberal education, I think it was attention and reading that you gave later, right subsequent to the time Tom was just talking about last, that gave me a grasp of how I connected with my fellow humans. It made a gross difference in my life, in my outlook anyway. But meanwhile, I'm struggling with this place that I could afford until my husband left me, and now I can't afford it on welfare, and I don't know what to do about it. And I've been in a car accident, and I was at the front end of a struggle losing custody of my son, who was 6 months old when my husband left. And my struggle in relation to the people who came to be the Scotts Creek Bluff community and the system were kind of parallel and concomitant, and they became my extended family and my support group.
Scotts Creek community, for those who don't know, is a group of people that who had been herded out of town from beach to beach because they lived in vehicles until they finally congregated on what they thought was a safe area, Scotts Creek Bluff, which is north of Davenport, a small town about 10 miles north of Santa Cruz.
Some of the people the police chased out of town ended up at Scotts Creek in what I call a stone soup community.
This is in tune with the upsurge of tickets that Tom mentioned.
And the other beaches were also becoming communities of whatever you call people who are ousted from
the community. Did you attempt any organizing activities or I guess that's great. So rather than the personal history, what I'm looking for is a perspective on different strategies that were being used, conflicting strategies, and how successful you perceived they were.
In the Scotts Creek part?
Let's take the Scotts Creek as a first case, and then we can go into the food stamp struggle and other struggles that came up.
Okay. Well, you know, most of the time with Scotts Creek, I didn't see myself as a key player. I came to see myself that way by the end of it, but you know, I saw myself as wanting to be a support person. I was just indignant and outraged at the way the town was treating ordinary people, you know. When I first met Tom and Andy, I was impressed by their industry, you know. Their willingness to take...
The people listening, what they did was they eventually arrested people, confiscated their vehicles, and then arrested them again, and had our largest misdemeanor trial, and the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history.
That's a year or so later.
Which was in the summer of 1978. Go ahead, sir.
So... I got involved with these guys because of the way Tom and Andy treated me. You know, I had been becoming isolated with these changes in my life, and that didn't seem to make a difference in how they approached me or other people. And, you know, I was enlightened by the message in some of Tom's puppet shows, and gratified to see that there were human beings treating children like my children the way children need to be treated. On my block, on Bellevue Street in Westside Santa Cruz, there wasn't much of that. My neighbors were still locked in under the fear of McCarthyism from 4 years before. So maybe it was only 30 years then or something. 20. Anyway, you know, it wasn't cool to wander around and act like a child and be free, even if you were a child, you know. And people didn't recognize each other, they didn't make contact. You'd think it was an urban ghetto or something, and it wasn't. I mean, it didn't seem like it should be. So I was drawn into the Scotts Creek thing because what I was trying to do is go to school and become a journalist. This is something I'd tried two or three times in my life. I thought it would be a good use of my innate curiosity, and I like writing. And that was both the beginning and the end of my journalism career. When things were coming to a head out at Scotts Creek, I got the okay from the publisher we were just talking about earlier at the Independent to let me cover this thing, and I went out there thinking I can be objective, which was our first political discussion, and try to watch what was going on, and losing any desire to be objective in the middle of it. You know, I took sides. I couldn't deal with what I now think is just this people trying to have power over, you know, one of the little macho games that a lot of us play in our society. But I was indignant at the dehumanizing behavior of the police. I got mad. I think I yelled at one of them or something. That was nothing compared to the rest of the strategy or drama that was going on, but it changed my life. And then watching how Keith was treated.
John Keith is a photographer for the San Francisco Independent.
Yeah. And I'm still angry about it, I guess. Anyway, so
well, you
I took sides.
Tell the audience how he was treated, because nobody
well, knows. The crux of it is that he was also there for the Independent. He was taking pictures. I'd gone up there nights before that and talked to the people out there.
Pictures of the Scotts Creek Bluff arrests.
Yeah.
They arrested many people simply for being present and living in their vehicles.
And the police ripped the camera out of his hand and threw it across the sand. And well, that's the key. You know, like, I just, you know, I never had an experience of this dominating, blatant, fascist approach to maintaining the peace until I saw it on the bus. And I've been to demonstrations in Washington, D.C., full of veterans hobbling home without half their legs and stuff. And I've seen the police in action on their horses, and I've seen the yippies try to cast some light on it, and I've never seen anything like this. These bullies already had total control of the situation, but they got miffed because somebody let some air out of their car tires. And they're going to batter people for it, you know? And you wonder why there aren't, why our young kids are out clubbing people in their sleep with baseball bats. Of course, it's because this is how they're taught to behave. This is how we pay police to behave, you know? Let's chase these people out of town because we don't know if they're a good product for our tourist economy, and then get them cornered. Then we'll just go bash them, and the problem's solved. And unfortunately, they were bashing people who were articulate and not isolated at the time, and other things came about. That's my idea. But anyway, that was the beginning and the end of my career as a journalist.
So again,
I took care of that anyway.
let's get back to this. I'm going to focus here on the organizing efforts to expose these police practices, to successfully combat the court trial, the court charges that resulted, and to change the policies and enlighten the public. Would you like to comment on either the strategies that was used, or divergent strategies that were proposed, and the one that was finally chosen, or your view of the strategies that were used with 20 years retrospect?
Yeah, sure. As I said in the beginning, my sense of what we were supposed to be doing as organizers was to find out what people wanted to do and help organize that into being. And my initial efforts prior to the first bust at Scott Creek, which is when Dick got busted for having a tent set up on the other side of the road. Anyway, but prior to that, I was going around meeting with people. There were a number of tickets that were happening out at the beaches and stuff, and they were chasing people off of other beaches. And so I was going around asking that. You know, if people were, you know, a lot of people were upset at this, these tickets and this whole effort that was the sheriffs were putting forward. So that could be a message to me that people want to move, want to act politically, you know. So I called meetings at different beaches for us to gather and exchange information and see what we were ready to do, march into town.
You also spoke to supervisors about this as well?
No, at this point, not yet.
Sorry.
March into town or what it was that people wanted to do. And we had a few meetings and people kind of vented anger, but sort of the mood that prevailed as far as what action to take was people sort of exchanged the information about how to get out of the police way, you know, that's mostly how people living in that position dealt with that situation. You know, people told them, well, what I do is, you know, I hide behind the bluff, and then when they come, I, you know, whenever I'm never home, when they, you know, and then I make sure I'm at a different place the next night. And ultimately, after venting anger about the fact that the cops would do this, people's solutions were non-political. While my partner was interested in making them political, I was going with this theory of mine that our job was not to make people act politically, but to, you know, encourage it if they're ready for it, you know, and do what they have in mind. Anyway, we had arguments about that, and ultimately there's not much you can do anyway if people aren't acting political. So our strategy turned out to be to follow our leaders, which was the mass.
It didn't move anywhere at this point.
All right, well, except it built, you know, and people did know that there were others in that position who they'd met with and who were upset at it, and there was a background being laid. We had no way of knowing that. It might have just all dissipated had the cops not pushed it further. It might have just dissipated.
Trading stories with each other about what this or that cop said, or which ones were really physically dangerous, or,
that's right,
or who owned the property, or mm-hmm. what the supervisors were doing.
Yeah, well, we were trying to find out who owned what property. We're running into trouble with that.
Yeah.
And some people did want, you know, a couple of people did want to, like, march into town or such, but...
The property in which Scott's Creek people were of Scott's Creek Bluff where people were camping.
Yeah, well, actually, the various properties where various people were camping. I was checking out the, trying to find out the owners of those properties and why it was that these places were the spots. In the case of Scott Creek, I was, it was notably confusing, actually.
And got more confusing the deeper you looked.
That's right.
We're being nice and confusing here, I think.
So, Linda, do you have anything to add about what you saw as far as the organizing strategies prior to us at Scott's Creek? Were we involved in that?
Well, I want to say I really agree with Tom that I felt he put a lot of energy into keeping people together and connected and listening to each other and insisting on that, you know, these people that were being made a target or a victim, that whatever actions we took be what they wanted. I remember arguing and disagreeing with him with all the Aries fury I could muster in a meeting we had, and I think Janelle's bus right over here on the Locust or Felix Street, we were parked near the Salvation Army on one of the side streets off Laurel. I agree with his philosophy in general, but for some reason, some decision we had to make, and we were in town, I just, you know, I thought it was wrong, and I couldn't get with where the majority of the people were at.
What was the decision?
I don't. I will at some point, but I can't right now. But and the whole meeting was me and Tom disagreeing, and everybody else was just watching it.
I wasn't at the meeting, so.
No, you weren't. You were in town at the time. I remember.
So let me skip ahead again. We've been talking for half an hour, and I'm having trouble getting us to a little bit of background is perhaps necessary. So what were the differences in strategies proposed by different leaders or by different factions?
I don't know why you're having trouble with that. That's just now what we're talking about.
But
the background was set up, and just now what we're saying, whether our job, our strategy was to lead people into political action or to follow them and help organize the action. That was a big difference.
I understand that, but we aren't really presenting anybody who had a different point of view and who adopted that strategy so we can compare the different results. Maybe we could do that. Was there anyone around, Andy perhaps, who was using that strategy with any success, the other strategy?
No.
The Vanguard strategy.
See, this worked because it kept everybody connected with each other. Despite the struggle of dailiness and poverty, and a transient lifestyle is a daily kind of a planning process.
Were there any people from, you know, let's take Mike Zaharakis. Was he involved in any of the organizing? Did he have a different strategy, sort of this is my kind of point of view, follow me, regardless of what the rest of you think, strategy?
I don't know how much Mike was in on strategy.
Maybe if you let this go a little bit further, you'll get into more opposition. At this point, early on, the two positions were, you know, that I saw. Well, actually, there were really three positions. There were those who were, you know, willing to and wanted to politicize this group and get them to stand up for the rights of the poor, you know, and fight for that.
And who were those people?
Andy was that...
yeah, that's true.
There were some characters who came and went who really said stuff like that at the meetings, but you know it was clear they weren't going to be around when the bust came.
Yeah.
You know, so, but there were a number of people in that position. George was getting real mad.
George,
black guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't really at that stage willing to.
Or in a position to.
But he was getting mad because of the way they were acting, you know.
And then there were all these kids, you know. There were teenagers and young kids in the group who had a more immediate way than what we're talking about here today of wanting things to happen or making things happen. But that's just natural kid energy.
Okay. So you
said there were three positions, that's the first one.
Right, and the third position was the one I described earlier, of how to stay out of their way.
The second
is that you fucking political people, you're always into the, and they lumped me with that group too, the fact that I was willing to take on political action. You know, there were lots of hippies who saw the whole hippie movement as like the politicos and the spiritual people.
Yeah.
And all that political action was this negative energy, it's just playing their game, man.
Yeah.
And that was very strong among all of the people. I'm not just saying this people at Scott Creek, we're now having these meetings with people at all the various beaches. And particularly the ones that weren't hanging out at Scott Creek and didn't know me in any other context except the guy who came and encouraged them to attend a meeting.
Right.
Thought that I was this political troublemaker who was going to stir things up and want to fight it out with the cops.
Right.
Right. Because there was a lot of energy like that around.
But yours, in fact, was the second position, which was to find out what people wanted and try to do that.
Right. And I encouraged people to stand up to it. That this ducking and hiding wasn't going to continue working, wasn't, in fact, working for everybody now.
Right.
Yeah.
That we had crossed that place. I was putting that forward, but, you know, if they weren't going to move that way, I didn't want to move.
Okay.
My position was, I think, subtler than it might sound. If we just call it the middle position, I'm just in favor of acting if the people want. I'm in favor of the people wanting to act.
Right.
Right. But I'm not in favor of acting until they do, and in the direction that they're now willing to go.
So
then, you know, whoever then agreed was now like committed to a bust at the county building or something like that.
So what happened then? So what changed and what new forces developed? What differences of strategy arose?
Well, it busted Dick.
Raising teenage children, sometimes on the beach. A man who, while camping out, was able to feed his children off of nature's greens and fish. They come in and just pluck the father out of this habitat for existing. That's all I understand.
Well, actually, we have to say that they also, the police, the sheriffs, that is, continued to bust the other beaches. And so, lots of people did, in fact, leave town. Some were still ducking and hiding in various places in town. But the numbers at Scott Creek dramatically increased.
So we're talking about the
group that used to be like 10 or 12.
December 1977.
Well, the bust of Dick was December 9th, 77. And a group that used to be like 10 or 12 suddenly became 40.
And it was this group that was eventually busted, what, in December 19th, was it? Or
December 20th.
December 20th, and then again busted the county building on 24th.
December 23rd.
I mean, all their homes have been sacked and battered like sleeping homeless people are today in Santa Cruz.
Right, so if you ask what happened, what changed things so that politicized that group, I'm sure some of the meetings we've had, the conversation from people who were willing to do political action had some background effect. But really what happened was the cops did successfully, as Linda described earlier, herd us all together. And then produced a real threat that people who were not into political action couldn't ignore. There were people at Sky Creek Bluff who were going to get busted. This was they came out, they busted Dick on December 9th, and while they were hauling him up the hill, somebody, I still don't know who, let the air out of the tires of the police car that was parked on the
road. Not you, even though Elizabeth Gibbs suspected as much.
Yeah, Elizabeth Gibbs didn't know one way or the other.
Right.
But she didn't believe it was me, just because she saw me as one of the politicals.
Was she a van dweller at the time?
Yeah, she was living in a van up at one of the other areas by herself, not with a group.
Right.
And I had gone to her and encouraged her to join these meetings, and she too saw me as one of the politicals.
So it's... Wow.
All right, now, here we are, and rather than this... interesting, exhaustive approach to events around Scott's Creek, which isn't quite what I was trying to get out of this discussion. Let me skip ahead here. Spiral into the future. In fact, go right to the nub of the issue.
Just when we were getting to the nitty-gritty, too.
Well, if you want to get to the nitty-gritty, it's fine. You were getting to the nitty-gritty 15
I'm sure what we're saying is interesting.
Well, it depends on what you consider, that might have something to do with the fact that when we turned this on, it was maybe not entirely clear to everybody what the nitty-gritty was.
I thought I was making clear, but let me begin again. Several days ago, you and I, Tom, had a conversation about differences in practices in terms of organizing and relating to politicians and strategies for getting oppressive laws against the poor modified or changed. And you had one point of view, and I had another. Let's put it this way. You saw us as having diametrically opposed points of view in 1988 when the city council was being confronted with demonstrations around the issue of the sleeping ban.
Fast forwarding to 88 now.
You got it. And the question then became, you pointed out that you were successful in sort of low-key negotiations with city council and supervisors.
Low-key?
Well, different strategy. Let me put it this way.
I would call them persistent. If I had to pin one word.
I'm eager to get your perspectives on this, and perhaps we should start with that. And because that really is the nub of it. You were angry at the activists in 1988 for adopting a strategy you felt was ineffectual and counterproductive. Am I correct?
I'm doomed.
Some of the activists, yes.
So maybe what we should do is begin in 1988, and then we can kind of work forward and backward from there.
If you like.
I think that might be a more productive thing. And then we can get you're here, Linda, to give your perspective, because you are enmeshed in the midst of this, too, as well as your view of what Tom has to say.
And I'm leaving in about 15 minutes.
Right. See, that's the problem. We get into the conversation.
Although I could come back when it gets honed in, maybe.
Well, I will be gone, too, so everyone will be gone, but that's fine. Go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
1988. What you saw as your differences with the activists in 1988.
Tofu on rice.
For 15 minutes. That would spend an hour doing
that. Well, there were individual activists. Robert Norris, Rocky. I had big differences with those approaches as I perceived them.
There were approaches?
Well,
I remember Rocky is just a bundle of energy bouncing off of other people.
Mm-hmm. It seemed to me, there were times between these two events that we've now discussed, besides being, you know, other events and strategies that we'll... you suggest we're going to back up to and discuss in this context. But in addition, there were periods of time when there was nobody doing anything about any of the issues of homeless, at least on the street level. You know, there were people at the Community Action Board, there were people on other levels who were addressing it, but there was nobody on the street level. Peter Corrada started a feeding people downtown. That was a concrete, real thing. He was bringing food to hungry people downtown. He was coming at it as a Christian missionary. Mm-hmm. But he was bringing food to people downtown. And he met resistance from the merchants.
He got pushed about because of their merchant resistance. Got moved first to the beach and then out of town altogether to near where they are now.
Right. But other than that, there were long periods where there was nobody doing anything. And then when Rocky and Robert and Jane Immler, Linda, Shannon, I wasn't clear about what all everybody was doing. I was now in and out of town a lot.
You were on TV. You were busy.
But it did look to me like the strategy was put it into high gear, put your foot to the floor, and go forward with no plan otherwise. Just do it. Just go to get as many homeless people as you can to go to every city council meeting, harass these politicians full on all the time. maybe I was missing some subtlety that was at work as well, but I made an effort to discuss it with the people that I knew. I didn't have too much discussion with Linda or even Shannon then, some, but mostly I had a lot of conversation with Robert, and suggested that there you might. So what's the, you're gonna just show up at every, you're gonna why are you attacking the, these are the very ones who could move. This is the Marty Wormhow, John Laird, I think are capable of, and who was it, Rotkin and Van Allen.
Van Allen was on the council, it was Jane Weed,
yeah.
You can back up and give us some discussion of why you felt this was so, and how you have in the past been successful in moving council members to have supervisors.
Well, actually, I haven't been all that successful moving council members. When I was doing this stuff in the past, it was a majority conservative city council. I did have support from some people, though, who were outside of the halls of power, who were from the progressive community. Over the years, I made an effort to encourage the progressive community to see the homeless issues as their issues, that they were on the side of the homeless. If it's going to be simplified, if it's going to be us and them, if it's going to be Marilyn Lydicote and Gary Patton, if that's the definition, Marilyn Lydicote was a right-wing supervisor, Gary Patton a progressive supervisor, if that's going to be the simple picture that people can see of what's going on, I would like them to think that homeless issues are, I would like Gary Patton to be on the side of the homeless, so that people who haven't worked out all of these things will see themselves, progressives, who in fact were the up-and-coming power in the county, to see themselves as in favor of homeless rights issues.
And specifically, at what times were you effective in doing this?
Well, that's kind of an insidious ongoing...
Just let him answer the question, it'd be nice. Let him answer.
Specifically, at what times? In 1979, I think it was, when, well, there was 77 with Scott Creek. At that point, we did end up dealing with the Board of Supervisors, mostly, more than the City Council. And the Board of Supervisors, there were three progressives, two conservatives, and the progressives, because they had the power, were essentially our opposition. We were asking Patton and Baldwin and Barabatz, the progressive majority of the Board of Supervisors, to change the law that the sheriffs were using. The sheriff was a conservative politician who was elected and was doing the Scott Creek bust. He was running that thing. And so we asked the progressives to change the law or create what Baldwin once referred to as a low-income travel trailer park, or a free zone where the cops could not come in and do what they were doing out at Scott Creek, which you kind of shortcutted the data behind that, but it was becoming more and more outrageous out at Scott Creek. The cops were raiding us in the middle of the night and acting in an extra-legal fashion. And so we were pleading with the progressives to see themselves as being on our side in this issue. They, in the meantime, were under attack from the right, that is to say that they were being recalled. And it looked like a pretty effective recall campaign. It looked like they were going to lose the progressive majority. Politically, they were in a no-win situation with the Scott Creek people. They could either support what was what the public's perception of the issue was a squatter's rights. So these left-wing politicians could support squatter's rights and therefore the Scott Creek people, or they could hold their ground and allow the sheriff to do what he was doing. Politically, clearly, it was to their advantage not to be entangled in this thing at all. I think that the bust happened at Christmas because the sheriff, who was a right-wing politician, wanted to embarrass the left-wing progressive majority, put them in that position so that they would be in a no-win situation. So at that time, I was trying to encourage the progressive politicians, Baldwin, Borabax, and Patton, to find another way of viewing this issue than the way that they were. Patton was successful, somehow, in sort of dancing out of our reach. I'm not sure how he did that, since we were, in fact, encamped in his district.
Maybe half.
Borabax essentially disliked us for being a political embarrassment. And Baldwin, who was a nice guy, tried to find some way of addressing. He continually met with us, but there was nothing like he could do. He was unwilling politically to align himself with our position. So I was singularly unsuccessful in swaying any progressive politicians anywhere in town into seeing their interests as co-equal with ours.
Or even that their interests would survive if they recognized yours.
Right. The result of all the things going on was that Baldwin and Borabax were recalled. Patton was not. Suddenly the board went from 3-2 progressive majority to 4-1 conservative majority. And now Gary Patton, sitting alone as the lone progressive on the board, it was... Now I made an effort in subsequent years when the conservatives came to power. One of their early actions was to make an attempt to cut people off of food stamps if they didn't have any place to live. They couldn't. They didn't have a house to sleep in. They couldn't eat either. I ended up going to a WELAC attorney, a welfare, education, legal assistance, something.
Center.
Thank you. And initiating a lawsuit to stop this. Judges kind of played around. I ended up in an effort to keep some public eye on this question so that the first of the month wouldn't come and go and chase people out of town who couldn't get their stamps. I made an effort to continually go into the food stamp office, letting people know, putting flyers out, and trying to get some news reports on what was happening. I started a fast. I wouldn't eat again until they had ceased in their effort to coerce people into leaving town using food as a weapon.
This is 1979.
'78 or '79, through some of these things, I'll judge.
Did you get much coverage on
it? Yeah, actually a fair amount of coverage. And then the woman I was seeing at that time, Andy and I had broken up, helped to organize students up on campus. And so 20-odd students joined the FAST. So that got some more coverage. And now I was able to talk to Gary Patton in another time. I mean, he had been, on some level, the enemy prior to. However, I did feel that it was dangerous for me to be of such use to the conservatives locally that I could be used to attack the progressives and weaken their base and help elect conservatives. The danger, one, was that we would end up with conservatives in town doing things their way. Their development practices would prevail, and other things that didn't relate to my issues would work in ways that I did not prefer. But also, I would never get the ear of the progressive community if I was of such use to the conservatives. Mm-hmm. And my only hope, ultimately, of changing the approach toward homeless people was to have the support of the progressive community in Santa Cruz. And so I didn't want to end up being seen as a tool to undermine the progressive movement, which was looking to secure some say-so in county and city politics in Santa Cruz. And so while Marilyn Litico suggested to the Scott Creek people more than once that she didn't see why something couldn't be set up for homeless people, maybe, you know, some place in the county. This was clearly a political ploy to encourage me to keep doing what I was doing, because what I was doing was going to hurt Baldwin, Borabax, and Patton during the fall campaign. She would like me to keep doing this. I was of use to her. I then went to Patton and Baldwin and said, this is what I think she's doing. And I have to do it. I'm going to continue to go after you. Give me something. Give me some reason to back off. Create something. Create
you
a
told
temporary.
Them that,
yes.
Frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah, well, I was pretty upfront with them about the political nature of things as well. So give me some reason. Otherwise, what choice do I have? But. And they said, well, you don't really believe her. No, I don't believe her, but that doesn't matter. That's what she's put it forward. I have to grasp it. I have the only straw. Clearly, I have no political power. The name of the group that's meeting with you here is called the Illegal Campers Group. We want to change our name, you know? You know. And you're our only hope for that, you know? You who have a progressive majority now. And I think you should identify yourself with us, and I think it can only help. Because it'll at least help secure your base during the upcoming election if you, you know, if you encourage the people who aren't really following this issue but see themselves as progressives, if they see you on our side, then they will rethink the issue and, you know.
Yeah.
There's
Does anybody disagree with you in this strategy, or did everybody support you in this?
Well, he was doing all the work of that.
Well, there were certainly people that disagreed with me about it.
There were people that took Lytikote seriously, like she really meant to be helpful. Of course, she recanted, but people thought, oh, wow, there's a little timbre of a promise of help, you know, let's focus on just that, you know.
What else did you observe about this period of, in terms of Tom's strategy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tried to be helpful and supportive both in all the research and in some of this, what I consider lobbying, but
And you had a place that people were laying all over the floor at your house, and,
yeah,
and your typewriter was
the real
was
support
sleeping.
I was able to give got me evicted.
I bet it did.
My neighbors decided I was running a prostitution ring because people would come to my house taking showers on their way to court, fresh from the beach. I mean, they got to drive 20 miles to get to court.
So the strategy you used, you're describing, getting back to the food stamp stuff, mm-hmm. or perhaps unless you want to round out.
No, let's go to the food stamp.
I think what made a difference, and I don't know how you could do this now, is that when Tom got focused on the issue and was able to show there were people concerned about it and there were people being affected by it, real people with names and faces that were here, there was an attorney and a base for getting legal support. And that's harder to do now, despite of the fact that Legal Aid decided to sue the county using the state's data for its abhorrent low-income and affordable housing policies in the housing element. Despite that one gesture, it's not as easy right now as it was in the early 80s or late 70s to walk in off the street and say, look what's happening here. You know, I mean, even those people who feel like civil rights belong to everyone except prisoners or aliens or something, that's a common belief in our society. Even people who believe that aren't willing to get behind it, you know, to insist on it right now.
So again, returning to the focus, which is Tom's disagreements with the strategies of 1988, his perceptions of them.
I thought you were just moving me up to the food stamp.
I am, but from that position. You're showing how your actions, I'm seeking this for you to describe how your actions were successful in the 78, whenever the food stamp thing happened, and contrasted with the actions of 88, or 94, or 95. In fact, the lessons that you learned could be so applied.
I'm pretty sure it was 79.
Okay.
And so what happened was the progressives were in fact recalled. The conservatives had the Board of Supervisors. And Gary Patton was the lone progressive voice on that board.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. A tape of a conversation between myself, activist Linda LeMaster, and Tom Noddy, made about a year ago, discussing events that have happened in the last two decades and different strategies of activizing. This is an abridged version of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We only have an hour and a half tape, but hopefully we'll be able to give you another tape soon, and if we can, we'll be returning to you at our usual time of Mondays and Fridays from 10 in the morning to noon. Until that happens, we're going to be leaving you. Perhaps this tape will be looping over again so you can hear the beginning of it in case you've missed that. Otherwise, stay tuned and demand that Free Radio Santa Cruz play more Bathroom Spears Broadsides. After all, hey, we're worth listening to, aren't we? In any case, we hope to conclude this Tom Noddy, Linda LeMaster, Robert Morse interview, or forum perhaps, or discussion, in the next session of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, plus updates on the Citizens Police Review Board, and of course the usual reports from the street, and from San Francisco, San Jose, and Palo Alto, where an anti-sitting ordinance is coming back to be considered at their city council. All of this, and updates on the city council race, music, songs, and laughter. Stay with us.